We are lucky to have the UW Extension offices located in every one of our Wisconsin 72 counties, and a lot of our best Garden Talk guests are Extension horticulture educators and ag agents. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today is no exception. Jason Fishbach is a UW Extension ag agent for Ashland and Bayfield counties. He's been a regular guest for our May broadcasts from Bayfield and Bloom for a long, long time, but we like to bring him in at other times as well. And today he's joining us from the campus of Northland College in Ashland. Jason, always great to have you join us.
Hi, Larry. Good to be with you today.
Really appreciate it. And I know you are at the Wisconsin Local Food Summit at Northland College right now. What's going on there?
That's right. So this is the annual gathering of the Wisconsin Local Food Network, where folks come from all over the state once a year and basically share stories about what they're doing to help grow the local food economy. And this is a great event to course up here because we don't have to travel so far to go to it.
Yeah.
And a whole 2 days of presentations and a lot of information sharing, a lot of learning.
What trends are you seeing as far as small farmers wanting to sell to locally to consumers?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's an exciting time to be an extension agent working in agriculture, because what has happened is that consumers are open and looking for alternatives to what they can get in the regular grocery stores. They're interested in buying directly from farmers. They're interested in buying fresher products. And what that's doing from an economic development standpoint is it creates all kinds of opportunities for small farms and businesses to interact with those customers. And hopefully what ends up happening is you get stronger and bigger businesses that are able to sell products, and you get a, particularly where I work up here in a rural economy, you get a more vigorous rural economy out of it.
Yeah, that's great. And I know there's some great training opportunities available as well. One's for apple growers, and that's coming up pretty soon, isn't it? Apple Growers School, isn't it?
Yep, the Midwest Beginning Apple Growers School this year is March 15th through the 17th, and it's going to be held up in Bayfield this year. It's a great opportunity because we're going to be able to walk right out into the orchards and take a look. And if you have any interest in growing apples commercially, this is a great opportunity. You can go to the Center for Integrated Ag Systems website, and you can download the brochure and registration form. So it starts March 15th. It's 3 days of really an incredible opportunity to learn how to be a commercial apple producer.
That's pretty cool. Well, I'm sure we have that up on my Facebook page as well. So, or if we don't, we'll have it within a few minutes at the Larry Mueller Show if you want some more information on that. And, you know, I mentioned hazelnuts as well in my introduction today to the show. And hazelnut growers have a conference as well.
That's right. This is the fourth annual Upper Midwest Hazelnut Growers Conference, and it's in Wisconsin this year in Eau Claire, and that's March 1 and 2, and the first day is intended for beginning and existing hazelnut growers, and then that's Friday, and then Saturday is our research and development day, where we've got speakers from across the country providing the latest and greatest information on the process of developing hazelnuts into a commercial crop here east of the Rockies. So that information is available at our hazelnut website. That's midwesthazelnuts.org. You can find the brochure and registration form there as well. That is coming right up March 1st and 2nd. So if you have an interest, now's the time to get registered.
Yeah, now's the time. Got a Facebook comment from Tad who says he's got 125 hazels in the ground since he first heard me talking about this with Melinda Myers. So he blames us for getting him involved with hazelnuts. He says I should be getting a few nuts this year from my 3-year-old trees. I just hope this year has a bit more rain. I just about wore myself out hauling water last year.
Yeah, especially when you've got new plants. It was a tough year last year.
Is it difficult to grow hazelnut trees and have hazelnuts?
It's very easy to grow they actually grow as multi-stem shrubs, and mm-hmm. The cultivars or genetics that are being grown in our region have the American hazelnut in their parentage. And
okay.
They grow wild. They grow on the worst soils you can imagine, well-drained, pure sand soils up in northwest Wisconsin. So they're real adapted to dry conditions. But the first year, just like any plant, you got to give them water to grow that root system. But once they're established, it's hard to kill them. you know, and that's the kind of that's what we like when we're trying to grow these. Now, in terms of hazelnut production, what I encourage hazelnut growers is you're growing hazelnuts, but you're also growing data, because we don't yet have commercially proven cultivars of hazelnuts. What we have is a whole pile of genetics, and we're still sorting through what does best. And the long-term goal of our project is to identify and develop locally adapted cultivars for every region of the state.
Very cool. I mean, is there a market? What's the market for hazelnuts?
The market's really pretty incredible, and you can kind of start from the top down. What most growers will do first to capture the most value is to squeeze the oil out of it and sell it as a commercial or as a salad oil. There's also demand in the cosmetics market, and that's where you'll probably see your highest return. And then you'll have the meal left over, and you can reconstitute it with a little bit of oil and make the spreadable nut butters like Nutella, and recently Smucker's has gotten into that as well. Then there's the potential of selling them as fresh-eating kernels. Now, the genetics that we have right now do not produce the same large nut size that we're used to from filberts or European genetics.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because what we're finding is folks that are baking or making value-added products, they actually like a smaller kernel. You know, if you're eating a trail mix, you'd rather have smaller kernels than larger kernels.
Right.
There's a lot of value there. Then on the backside, as product scales up, what folks are excited about is because the fatty acid content is more or less polyunsaturated, you know, it exceeds that of olive oil. So it's a healthier oil, but that makes it a superb biodiesel.
Oh.
So if enough production, you know, you would rather produce biodiesel from a perennial crop than from a crop that you've got to till the soil every year and add in a whole lot of energy inputs to make it happen. So we're really excited about hazelnut, primarily because of all these different marketing opportunities for growers.
Yeah, sounds like a lot. And again, there's this conference coming right up, March 1st, that people, you know, there's some interest there,
yep.
Probably be a good place to go.
Saturday in particular, you'll be able to hear what's happening down in Nebraska. There's a research consortium there. Folks over in Ontario are going to be there talking about their project. And then, of course, we'll be talking about the project here in the Upper Midwest. So it's an exciting time, and encourage folks to come out and learn more.
So we've got apple and hazelnut trainings, and we've got those all linked to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So you can go there if you want to find out more about it. A lot of us are, you know, we're already itching to get into the garden. Seed catalogs started to show up. Have you got any in your office yet?
Oh, yeah. I always get the phone calls for those alternative fruit sections.
Yeah.
Right, so that's starting again.
Yeah, all right. Well, they're always very enticing, and I don't know. Do you use this time of the year to plant? I think it's actually some of the best times of the year is this time of the year for planting out a garden.
Yep, for sure. You know, I use spreadsheets a lot and kind of sketch out what the garden's going to look like this year, and then I have a record of where the plants went last year, so I'm making sure I'm rotating crops, and it's a great opportunity to really think what's my plan this year, what's my plan next year. And then, of course, you spend way too much money on seeds, and it's just organized chaos from then on until the next year. But I love it.
I know what you're talking about, Jason. Jason, go ahead.
Larry, at some point during the show here, we should talk about dormancy in our woody perennial plants, because with this crazy weather we're having, yet again, another year of crazy weather, I think it's helpful for folks to understand what's happening in these woody perennials, our fruit trees and our flowers and shrubs. So if we get a chance, let's talk about that.
We definitely will. Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties, our guest. We are certainly talking about a whole broad range of things. We've zeroed in a little bit to start here on hazelnuts and apples, but we'll certainly talk in more general terms. This dormancy business with woody perennials is definitely something we need to address, and you may have general questions of your own. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post your question or comment there, and at the same time, you'll find out about those training sessions. And Gary in the town of Ween, up with a question for you, Jason, so let's go there. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Larry, Jason. A great show as always. We're looking forward to going to Ashland for the Book the Bay ski race in a couple of weeks. We always love doing that. My question's on pruning apple trees, and I've held back on pruning this one yet this winter because we had a few apples on, and we've got a pileated woodpecker coming in and feeding on the apples about 15 feet from our window. And I wondered if he could give me some advice on pruning apple trees and how long I can put off doing it before it gets too late in the season.
Well, this is a great opportunity to talk about dormancy because this is the one thing we can do to deal with this weather. So let's start from the beginning in the fall. What's happening is the trees are responding to the shorter days and the cooler temperatures, and they start to go dormant. And basically that means they pull water out of their cells and they change some of the proteins around so that there's more or less, say, antifreeze within the cells. And that process is called endodormancy. And that dormancy is kind of neat because the plant will not grow while it's in endodormancy, no matter how warm it gets. While it's in that endodormancy, it can kind of, its acclimation can vary as the temperatures change a bit. But generally, once it's in endodormancy, it acclimates to cold, and you can throw 20, 30 belows at it, no problem. You know, it depends on the plant. Some, of course, can't go that cold. But so then what happens, and the scary part, if you will, is that once the plant accumulates a certain number of chill hours, and those would be hours where the temperature is, you know, roughly between 32 above freezing and about 50. Once it's accumulated enough chill hours, then it comes out of endodormancy. And at that point, if the plant gets warm enough and the temperatures warm up, it'll start to grow. And that's when things really get dicey. So what's happening here as the winters are warmer is that they're accumulating more chill hours sooner. And so they're ready to come out of dormancy and, you know, about
earlier.
Yep. And now we get these really cold temperatures and especially fluctuating temperatures because once they're out of endodormancy, they really can't reacclimate. So when they're in endodormancy, if the temperature gets kind of warm, they'll come out of a little bit. But then if it gets cold, they'll reacclimate. Once they're out of that and into this ecodormancy, they really can't adapt to the really cold temperatures once it starts warming up. So that's where we really want to think about, okay, where are we at in our chilling hours, and are these plants coming out of dormancy? Now, with pruning, there's some evidence that pruning will cause deacclimation, so it actually makes the plant less tolerant of cold temperatures, particularly once we're in this ecodormancy period. So we're definitely encouraging landowners or homeowners to delay their pruning as long as they can, you know, well into March. You know, it depends where you are in the state, but you don't want to wait too long where they start growing or putting out green tissue, but into March for sure. Now, if you've got 100 acres of apples, you've got to get going as soon as you can, but if you've just got a few apple trees, the longer you can wait, the better. And the other thing that allows you to do is you can take cuttings off those trees over, let's say, starting in a couple of weeks into March and force them. Just stick them in water in your house, wait a few days, and then you can section those buds and see if they're dead. See if there's any browning or discoloration, and that gives you some clues that when you are ready to prune, say late March, you'll know how much damage there might be in that tree. And so if there's a lot of damage, you're going to take off a lot less wood. If there's really no damage, then you might prune a little heavier because you're not so worried about getting rid of too many viable flower blossoms. So that's kind of where we're at right now is these wildly fluctuating temperatures are going to cause some damage, particularly if we're coming into this season because of the drought. So we're definitely nervous again.
All right. So, Gary, hold off. Hold off on that pruning. Michael in Maple, Minnesota, your turn. Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
My call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just happened to be listening, and I wanted to comment on the gentleman earlier about the hazelnuts.
Yeah.
But my honey, she has a PhD in plant genetics, and she's been working for a company called Badgerset out of Amherst, Minnesota. And for the last 30 years, they've concentrated on nothing but hazelnuts. So when he talks about them, you know, like one of the attributes would be the oils. Well, that's oil is... It's sought after because it's highly expensive. I mean, to buy even a quart, you're looking like $28 versus olive oil. But she's come up with a hybrid that does quite well in Minnesota in the upper Midwest. We have a crop in now, which also she did a hybrid of hickory pecans, and we just planted 60 acres worth last year. But what we've done to accommodate for the variance in temperatures is we put up two greenhouses so we can start the seeding process earlier. And so when it does break, they're already acclimated to the soil that they're going to be planted in. So, but that was my main comment was we've already come up with a pretty good hybrid for the upper Midwest area.
Yeah. What's your hybrid called?
It's a cross between the European and the American, which is the American hazelnut is really quite poor species compared to the European. The Europeans are bigger, rounder, more consistent in size. But they've come up with one that is does really good, and especially with the heat we had last year. Mm. We had a customer over in Wisconsin that he's up to 10,000 plants already. And even with the drought that he's had, he's done pretty good with them.
Yeah.
Over 80%. So, but the good thing about the hazelnut is the what it does for the environment. It brings back a woody environment for nature. It's not just like dead ground, which you see 60% of the time with the traditional corn planting that you see. Usually you only get like 90 days worth of growth, and then the rest of the year it's dead. But with the hazelnuts, it's a year-round production. So it's also good for the environment.
So what's the name of the company again?
Badger Set. Yeah, and they have a webpage. So if anybody's interested, they can go on there and see what they've been doing. Like I said, they've been at it for 30 years. So he pretty much knows what he's talking about.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Comments, Jason?
Yeah, he's exactly right. Those Badger Set hybrids, so their breeding program, they've been crossing a range of different species together, and the hybrids they've been selling to growers across the region, and those more or less constitute the existing hazelnut population of those hybrids. Now, it's important to recognize that the vast majority of them are seedling origin, which means they're all genetically unique from each other. That's why, you know, when I say we don't yet have cultivars, we don't have clonal material like we do with, say, a Honeycrisp apple. So one of the roles that we're playing with the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative is working with all these growers. And you know, we've identified so far about 140 growers across the three states. And folks at the University of Minnesota have been screening those plantings, because remember, every plant within those is genetically unique, to try to find the ones that are doing the best. And some of them are really pretty incredible. And then what we've done is established some replicated germplasm trials across the three states to evaluate the best of the best in common garden plots, essentially is what they are, to see how they perform across that range of environment and compared to each other. And eventually those then will be made available to growers. So it's, and that's great to have that diversity of genetics across the landscape, because then chances are good we'll find locally adapted material.
Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties today. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk. We've zeroed in a bit on hazelnuts, and we've been talking apples, but certainly there's a whole variety of things we can talk about with you. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question, a comment there at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly always love to hear from you, so please call or write. And Matt in Wausau, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having the show. It's been great. Jason, I'm going to shoot this question right at you. I've got some recreational property west of Washburn, and I'm going to end up retiring there eventually. But I've noticed some hazelnut brush around, and as I walk around, I think, well, maybe that's something I can commercially grow there. at some point. I don't know if you're familiar with that area up around Long Lake, but it's pretty sandy. It's oak, popple, maple, basswood, kind of sandy and gravelly. Is that a place where I might be able to grow hazelnuts, or is that, you know, kind of a pipe dream? You know that area, I'm sure.
Yeah, so what you're seeing on those soils would be American hazelnut. And we've been screening the wild populations now for 4 years. We've done about 40 sites across northern Wisconsin looking for pure American hazelnuts that can put out a lot of nut production. And we've identified quite a few. Those are now in our germplasm trials to see what they can do in an agronomic setting, say when they're given some water and weed control and that kind of thing. So whether or not the pure American selections will amount to commercially viable crops, we don't really know. We know some of the data from the wild suggests that although the nuts are really small, you know, the kernels are tiny compared to the hybrids or compared to the European genetics, total kernel yield, so if you're pressing oil, that's really what matters is total kernel yield. Total kernel yield can be competitive with the larger nut size. You just have more nuts with smaller size.
Well,
so
I guess what I'm asking is, I mean, could I put in a hazelnut hybrid in that kind of soil up on that ridge west of Washburn and expect any success?
Yes, with caution, though, because, again, we don't have commercially viable cultivars, proven cultivars. What we have is a range of genetics, and that pool has shown some real promise, and there are growers that are making a go at it with that pool of plants, and that would mean, you know, if you have 100 plants, maybe 60 of them will be pretty good, 10 will be just great, and the rest will just not be worth growing. So that's kind of what you'll be planting if you do so in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. Eventually, we'll have proven genetics, and you'll have some better plant material to work with. So sort of eyes wide open as you get into it, but that's what it takes. You know, that's what we're going to have to do to build the industry is you've got to have early adopters starting with the available genetics, and as you go, things improve over time. That's been the case with every plant.
All right, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, for calling. Appreciate it. Jackie and Rhinelander, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, hi there. Larry and Jason, I didn't know if I could have you answer my question. It's about a jasmine plant. A year ago about this time, I received one, and it flowered and through the winter, and then I put it out in the summer, and it really grew nice. Now, in the fall, I cut it back, brought it back in, and it has not flowered this winter. You know, and they have a nice, fragrant little flower. I was told to water it with a liquid fertilizer like Miracle-Gro. Is there anything you can suggest? Not to use the stick, they said. They wouldn't work. They had something in them that would harm it or something.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with jasmine plants.
Okay, I know today isn't the day.
Does it look healthy and green and lush?
Mm-hmm.
And you're fertilizing how often?
Well, I just quit because I thought I had been using it, what was it about, maybe once or twice a month, liquid fertilizer, the amount it said.
Okay. I mean, you know, I don't know the specifics of the jasmine necessarily, but generally fertilizing is good for the plant, but not that great for flowering. Sometimes it's so lush and green that it's not putting its energy into flowering. So you might just restrict or stop fertilizing, and that might trigger the flowering response. But I have to do a little bit more digging on.
I appreciate that. I know you're right on the apples and the other things are with the hazelnuts, but I appreciate your time for giving me some sort of an answer, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. Marion in Windsor, hi to you.
Hi. I'm wondering if you know anything about growing the wolfberry or goji berries bushes. I just familiarized with them a little bit, and I'm wondering how they do. I see Jung's Garden Center does carry them. Do you know anything about them?
Yeah, my understanding is they can be a fairly robust plant, but they're generally not hardy for our climate.
Oh,
I think there is a zone, zone 6 or 7, and it's just not reliable here. I'm about as far north as you can go in Wisconsin, so I've not seen anybody growing them commercially here yet.
I'm in the Madison area, so. Okay, well, thank you.
One of those deals where, you know, it could work for a couple of years, and then, bang, you get a bad winter, and there they go. Gary in Boscobel. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Larry. I wanted to make a comment on the Native American hazelnuts.
Yeah.
I worked in a state tree nursery in Boscobel for 29 years, and we grew many of the local native shrubs there, dogwoods, and one of them included hazelnut. And your guest mentioned that they were a reliable perennial crop, and they're not. There was oftentimes 2 or 3 years in a row when we wouldn't find any seed on the wild hazelnut crops in southwest Wisconsin. And I worked with this stuff for we would clean, when we had a good crop, we'd clean several hundred bushels of hazelnut. So I was well aware of the seed production, and that goes with almost all native species, whether it's oaks or maple, dogwoods or nine bark, any of those. Their seed production can be really sporadic, and we never really understood why they would be that way. And another thing is being involved with prairie conservation is we kind of believe that hazelnuts were associated with savannas, and in that regards, they may benefit from occasional burning, just like blueberries tend to produce good crops after they've been through a fire. So the folks are trying to grow hazelnuts. Fire may be a tool that would be incorporated in their production methods.
Hmm. Thanks for calling, Gary. A comment, Jason?
Yeah, sorry if there was some misunderstanding. The plant itself is vigorous, even the Pure Americana, but the actual the yield, as the caller suggests, it, particularly in the wild conditions, is highly variable from year to year. You know, you'll go years with nothing, and then all of a sudden you get this huge crop. The other issue with the Pure American in wild populations is you get these nut weevils. So you can have almost every nut has a little weevil in it, and there's no kernel. So that's why there's all this breeding work, is to try to find the material. So, yeah, sorry if I suggested that these are ready to go right out of the gate. They definitely need some improvement.
Okay.
One of the issues, too, with the rejuvenation, that's a question that we're exploring, is how best do you manage these once you have them in plantings, and coppicing or renewal pruning or burning, because you're right, when you get that regrowth, they tend to be very vigorous, and you get some pretty nice yields right after that. But that's an issue with any crop, is trying to manage the biennial bearing or regularity of that production.
Kathy and Madison, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
About 10 years ago, or I bought the house about 12 years ago, and then 10 years ago, I bought a wild plum from the Arboretum, and I did not know what I was doing, and I only bought the one tree. And so I am looking for a plum that will bear fruit that I could eat. I was lazy. I could have called they have sales every year, but nevertheless, I've heard of plums that will bear fruit that you could, edible fruit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a number of cultivars available. The one that's a fairly recent release from UW River Falls, actually, Brian Smith's breeding program, is called Black Ice. Black Ice. Yeah,
well,
you should be able
wonderful.
To find it. It is a great, great plum. You're going to need a pollinizer. So
sure.
You typically
well,
will
that,
plant
that
black
was
ice.
My question, you know.
Yep, and they recommend you plant Toka. T-O-K-A, as you
T-O-K-A, okay.
Yep.
That will not pollinize with the wild plum, necessarily.
No, it will. Toka is generally a good recommendation for pollinizing any
okay.
of your plums.
Okay, all right. Well, and the black ice, though, that would not cross-pollinate with the wild plum? Or it would?
It should, but it's a good question. Your black ice is going to produce, you know, black ice plums, regardless of where the pollen comes from.
Doesn't matter.
I don't live too far away from the, I forget the various, I'm sorry, I can't remember it, so I'll hang up.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling, appreciate it. We have more callers online. You can join in at 1-800 642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We had an email from Kathleen, who lives in Minneapolis. Several years ago, she was up in Grand Marais and picked up a couple of windfall apples from a tree beside the road. They were some of the best apples she ever ate. Didn't know what kind they were. She's a six-hour drive away from that tree. However, she has a friend in Grand Marais, and she could have him cut several scions and mail them to her to graft to one of her trees. Would that work?
It would work wonderfully well. I encourage that folks sample all these ditch apples because chances are that some of those are really good. And you can't save the seeds from those. They won't come true, so you've got to take the scion wood. And generally, you want to cut those from the what we'll call water sprouts. Those are those really vigorous sprouts that come off old wounds or off pruning cuts.
Yeah.
And you'll cut those before they come out of dormancy. So usually the end of February, early March. Wrap them in some wet newspaper or damp newspaper, stick them in a plastic bag, and put them in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And then you can graft them onto the tree a little bit later in the spring. And do a couple of them, a couple different ways of grafting too, so you've kind of maximize your chances.
Very cool. Mary in Port Wing, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I am a commercial plant grower and gardener, and I grow squash and cucumbers for sale. In the last 2 years, you get this beautiful stand, and all of a sudden they wilt. And when you dig up into them, there's a little bit of maggots in the roots, not in the stem. What is flying in, and what can I do to stop it? And it happened to a friend in Ulu with their squash out in the field, so it's around.
So you're seeing the maggots on both the cucumber and squash root?
Yeah, all those kind of guys. And a friend of mine in Ulu found them in their winter squash. So it's new in the last 2 years. But short of putting Rime on, which makes it hard to sell plants, who is it? And what do I need to do to stop it?
Okay, so these are... Just so I'm clear, you're growing these and then transplanting them out in the field, and then as they grow, then you're seeing them wilt once they're out in the field?
No, I'm growing them, and if you get them past that spot, they're fine. It's while they're on the bench before they go to sale.
Gotcha.
But it happened to someone in the field, too, so it's not unique just to me. That was the point of that.
Okay.
So
and
they'll be, like their first set of true leaves, and all of a sudden they wilt. You dig in the soil, and there's somebody has flown in the window and landed, put maggots on them of some kind. It's not in the stem, but it's in the roots.
Okay. I don't know offhand. The thing would be to if it happens again, we need to get them positively identified. And so that means saving those larvae and sending them down to probably Phil, and he can identify them. Last year was a pretty unique year for our region in particular because so much blew in. We had this variegated cutworm moth invasion.
Yeah,
we had aphids that blew in, leafhoppers, and my guess is this is something else that blew in.
I had it the year before as well, which is very strange.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know offhand, so let's try to get it identified.
And one more comment, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The person that's growing jasmine, those are forced plants. You need to fertilize it, but you need to fertilize it with a bloomer special type of fertilizer, not a high nitrogen, if you want them to bloom in captivity, basically. So go, I'm an organic grower, but if she's using Miracle-Gro, get the bloomer special. That's what it needs, and it needs to be fertilized regularly if you want flowers.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, more callers on. Oh, there's a hazelnut question from Bill in Menominee. I want to get that. Wondering how attractive hazelnuts are to squirrels and deer. Would we be just planting to support colonies of squirrels and deer?
So the plants themselves are, deer will eat anything. But because they have these pretty sticky trichomes on them, it's really not preferred browse. It depends. You get a deer that really likes it. It's, we used to say there were deer-resistant plants, but that's kind of out the window. But our experience has been that the deer tend to not prefer to browse the plants themselves. The nuts are a whole other story.
Yeah.
As soon as those nuts are ripe, every critter in four counties is going to come to your hazelnut planting. And that's blue jays, raccoons. The mice will climb up the stems. Red squirrels love them, chipmunks, everything, right? So the trick is that the growers have learned is to pick them about a week early and then finish the ripening in the barn away from the critters.
Ah.
And the way you can tell is when the hazelnut starts to loosen up within the involucre, kind of like a loose tooth, then it's ripe. And if you can pick it just before that happens, then the animals tend to leave them alone. So that's what they're doing. But it's like any crop. You're going to feed the wildlife a little bit anyway, and you just have to take a full range approach to try to manage those critters.
I got a Facebook question from Pam, who was this about apples. She said, we're planning on starting a home orchard this year. Is it best to purchase rootstock or the ball?
If it's just a handful of trees, my take would be the bare root dormant or a potted or in a root wad is fine if they're dormant. I think I prefer that folks plant dormant material just because you've got more leniency in terms of things going wrong. Once they're leafed out, you know, they're more susceptible to overwatering, underwatering, transplant shock, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So other than that, the thing to look out for would be bare root material that is put into a pot at the nursery, grown for a week or even less, and then you get it home, and now you've got a plant that started to grow as though it's in a potted plant, but really it's a bare root plant. So get them either bare root dormant, or get them potted dormant or bald and burlap dormant.
All right, makes sense. Mary Ann in Westfield, hello to you.
Yes, hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I know they have a lot of apple orchards up in Bayfield, and my brother who lives in Tomahawk, he has a couple apples and pear trees, and it seems like every single year, whenever the blossoms come on, you get a frost. And I was just wondering, is there any secret to that? Do they go out there and cover the trees, or what can you do to protect them?
Yeah, so that's why growing apples along the Great Lakes shorelines, they have an advantage because the cold water in the spring slows down the spring. It's you don't really want to be in Bayfield if you're looking for warm spring temperatures because the lake tends to keep it moderate. And that's great because it slows the plant down so they bloom later, so you've got a lower chance of frost. So even where I live, about 15 miles south of Ashland, the spring is much warmer. It's about 2 weeks ahead of Bayfield. And because of that, there's a higher chance of frost. You get down toward Tomahawk, the same issue is there. One thing you can do if you are inland is plant your trees, and I think this is going to be increasingly important, plant your trees on a north-facing slope so that the season warms up just a little bit later, and that'll decrease the likelihood of frost damage on those blossoms.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Agriculture Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties, our guest today on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Jason Fishbach, our guest, UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. We've talked a lot about apples trees, and we've talked about hazelnuts as well, but we've gotten into other things. We've talked about, oh my gosh, seed catalogs. We've talked about pruning. We've certainly talked about dormancy. There's a lot of issues with that with our woody perennials. You can join in. Maybe you've got a question about your garden or maybe about your plants. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. A couple of open lines, though, at 1-800-642-1234. Valerie in Grafton up next. Val, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm interested in growing some kiwi, and I'm wondering what plant or what type would be the best for the Wisconsin climate.
Kiwi?
Yes.
Hmm.
I've heard it's possible, so I'm hopeful.
Yep. So Michigan State has done a little bit of work with kiwi, and there's actually a variety called Michigan State. And they, you've got to make sure you have both a male and a female plant, okay? You need the pollinator. So you're going to need more than one, and you might, you know, go four or five or six to make sure you've got one of each. And they tend to be fairly hardy. I know of folks growing them in the Duluth region, down to zones 4. So I'd give it a shot. Folks are growing more and more of these. I don't have much personal experience with them. None of our growers have them, but I know there's some work in that field, and I'd go for it. Just make sure you've got more than one plant because you need the pollinator.
Now, it's a bush-type plant? Is that what it is, Jason?
No, it grows as a vine.
Grows as a vine. Okay.
Yep.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Val, for calling. Appreciate your call. And kiwi are awfully good. I love them. I like that. I love to eat them. Hino in Neillsville. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I'm wondering, because we're clearing out some of our property, and we're in a heavily pine area, so we've got some pretty acidic soil, but we want to prepare it for gardening, other trees, flower gardens, et cetera. How is the best way to do that?
Have you cleared the trees already?
They're doing it right now.
Okay. So there's once you've got the trees out and the stumps pulled and everything and it's cleared out, you want to pull a soil test and just make sure you know what that pH is going into the gardening season. And before you do anything, if it's too low, you know, you want to get that up certainly above 6, but closer to 6.5 if you can. You'll need to add some lime to get it there, and you would fully incorporate that. You can't just sprinkle it on the surface. You have to, you know, top dress it on and then dig it in or till it in as deep as you can go. And that'll help you get that pH up. Then it's like any garden anywhere. It's all about organic matter and trying to incorporate compost or any other source that you've got, if you can get it from the city, or you can have your own compost pile. And
yeah,
then with those...
Jason, go ahead.
Okay. With those soils, the tendency is that pH is going to continue to creep down. So you're going to want to test that probably at least every 4 years, maybe even more frequently, and apply the lime as necessary to keep that pH up.
All right.
Okay. The next question, follow-up to that then. So that would be mandatory to add that lime and fully incorporate it prior to throwing a layer of manure or something from a local farmer several inches over the top of that then.
Yeah, you could put all of it on at the same time and then till it in all at the same time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Terry in New Lisbon. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Mueller, several months, years, whatever ago, you had a gentleman on your program that told how to get a apple tree to produce fruit. I have one that's about 10 years old, and it has not produced any apples. It'll blossom slightly. Now, if memory serves me right, you're supposed to beat it up by going around the trunk with something and kind of beat it up and so it thinks it's going to die, and then it'll produce. How bad do you beat it up?
Yeah, I think Terrell Roper used to say, take a baseball bat to it.
Yeah, but, you know, but taking a baseball bat and tapping it and taking a baseball bat and whopping it is two big things.
Yeah, it is different. Jason, what's your recommendation?
Well, there are things we can do to try to figure out why it's not producing apples. So one thing is, you know, starting here in a couple of weeks, start taking cuttings of the fruiting branches.
Uh-huh.
They should have accumulated their chill hours, so they'll grow. So if you leave them in the pots for a while in water, they'll eventually bloom for you if they have bloom. So that can tell you if, you know, let's say the cuttings in mid-February all produce blooms, but the cuttings in mid-March don't.
Okay.
And it's likely you've got a winter hardiness issue on your particular property. It keeps freezing and killing the fruiting buds.
I have numerous, not numerous, but I've got a half a dozen other apple trees, a plum tree, a peach tree, pears, everything else that blooms, produces fruit, all but this one dumb tree, and it's the biggest tree out in the orchard.
Okay, so the other thing is to get those branch angles so they're more horizontal than vertical.
Okay.
And because if it's, particularly if it sounds like it's the biggest tree, it may be on a standard rootstock, so it wants to grow into a big tall tree. It doesn't really want to flower.
Right.
So if you pull those branches down, either tie them down or use a piece of wood to spread them, or just with your pruning.
Okay.
Think of an octopus standing on its head and reaching its tentacles out, holding a platter.
Takes an imagination, doesn't it?
And so you've got these sort of horizontal arms sticking out from your tree.
Right, right.
And that'll help. It may not, you know, it's not going to help necessarily this year produce.
But you don't recommend beating them up, huh?
Well, no, because I think you're introducing problems to the tree down the line. I mean, okay. The other, you know, let's do those tricks first, and then the other one you can do is on the branches that are fairly horizontal, you can actually take a pocket knife and just score it. You don't want to cut all the way through the cambium, but you're going to cut all the way around in the bark.
Okay.
And that actually can cause some more fruiting wood to develop.
Okay.
Flowering. So try those things.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Baseball bat to it.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Bill in Plover. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was just interested, kind of as a hobby. I like to grow a variety of different fruit trees, but I was thinking about some nut trees, such as the hazelnut, maybe some pine nuts, maybe some of the bur oak. I was just wondering what your thoughts were, chestnut, things like that.
Where are you located?
Plover, Wisconsin, by Stevens
Point. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, it's if you're doing it on a hobby scale and you don't mind losing plants once in a while, I'd try everything
right.
You can get your hands on.
Okay.
There, you know, the chestnuts in particular, there's that same company, Badgerset, that was talked about earlier, they also do some hybridizations with chestnuts, so American chestnut with Chinese chestnut. And some of the material that is being released right now is pretty exciting. Hardiness is potentially an issue, but the chestnut blight is more or less cured with these hybrids.
Okay,
so you might
great.
Try some hybrid chestnuts.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we had a caller wondering what you think about saving seeds from veggies and fruits that were produced, not just seeds that weren't used one year and saved the next. So you've got veggies or fruits out there, and you've got seeds, obviously, that are part of those fruits or veggies. What about planting them next year or this year?
Yeah, so saving seeds from fruit crops, you're not going to get the same plant back that you started with, that you saved the seed from. So it's generally, I mean, unless you're intentionally doing that, you want to see what you get from a bunch of different apple seeds. With vegetables, that's, you know, it varies so much from plant to plant. I definitely recommend seed saving is fun, but it's complicated, and it's maybe get a good introduction to seed saving book. Because you have to worry about if you're trying to save seed true to type. You know, you've got to know how far the pollen might fly, whether they're self-pollinating. You know, beans and peas can be easier, but something like onions or carrots where pollen's blowing all over the place, it's hard to, if the seed isn't necessarily going to come true to what you saved it from. So it's definitely a fun thing to play around with, but check out some books and start there.
And we have Pat who wondered in a Facebook question about those water spouts from old wounds on trees. Is there any way to stop them from, like, coming up on an old maple tree? We cut them off, but they always, more of them always sprout.
Yeah, they're going to keep sprouting. Usually the root suckering is due to a weakened tree. It's sort of the first sign that tree is not in very good health. You can keep cutting them back, or sometimes the rabbits take care of it for you. But maybe start poking around with the rest of the tree, looking around to see if you're finding dead branches or some sloughing bark or something else, because it's usually a pretty good sign that something's going wrong with that tree.
And then a caller in Manitowoc wanted to know how you harvest hazelnuts.
Yep. Right now it's by hand, and it actually goes pretty quickly. You're just out there, and you have a gunny sack or something, and pull them off and stuff them in the sack, and then folks will dry them in, say, onion mesh bags or in big open-air crates. What's being developed is technology based on a blueberry harvester, which goes over the top of the hazelnut row, and it has these sway-action arms that actually throw the hazelnuts off the plant, and then they come out the back end of the machine. That's not going to be viable until you've got a large enough planting, but for now, you can plant or harvest, you know, in short time. It's work, but it's definitely doable.
Yeah, get yourself a little exercise out there. Right.
The other thing when you're doing that is the bald-faced hornets love to nest in hazelnut shrubs.
Oh, so watch out for the bald-faced hornets. Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Agricultural Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Always such a pleasure to have folks from the UW Extension join us for Garden Talk. They have a broad range of knowledge. They're really good at explaining things, whether you're talking about a brand new gardener or whether you're talking about a pro gardener who's called in. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today we have Jason Fishbach join us. He's a UW Extension ag agent from Ashland and Bayfield counties. Been a regular guest for our May broadcast from Bayfield and Bloom for several years, but we like to bring him in at other times as well. And today he's joining us from the campus of Northland College in Ashland. And Jason, thanks again for spending time with us. Really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure.
We have lots of questions. We've covered a lot of things relating to apple trees, for sure. We've talked about hazelnuts. As a matter of fact, John in Iowa wonders if you can grow hazelnuts successfully from the nuts you buy at the grocery store.
Let's see. Most of those are going to be European cultivars. They, unless they're treated in some way, they should grow. The question is, have they had enough chilling hours themselves that they would germinate? So you could try, you'd have to stick them in the refrigerator for a while to get the chilling requirements. I don't know that much about sprouting the European cultivars. The issue here is, you know, we should talk about this because European cultivars of hazelnuts, of Corylus avellana, are available, and there's some question whether they might grow in Wisconsin. They're supposed to go to a zone 5. The issue is eastern filbert blight, and it's a disease that is endemic to our region, and the American hazelnuts are adapted to it. European hazelnut largely is not. But they have recently, breeders in Oregon State have released some cultivars that are resistant to EFB. And I should back up. EFB is a lethal disease. It'll kill these plants in a matter of months if it gets into the orchard. So it's got to be resistant to EFB. So there's 5 varieties now that at least are for consideration. The easier ones to remember, Lewis, Clark, and Sacagawea.
Okay.
Those are worth trying, I think, but just be aware, we have no data on their performance, and anything you might hear about growing these in Wisconsin would be largely anecdotal. The concern would be, they are EFB resistant to the strains that have been tested, but what we're learning is that there are multiple strains of EFB. So whether they're resistant to all, we don't know yet. And the other one is cold hardiness is still a concern for the European variety. So that would be my concern. If you can get those nuts from the grocery store to grow, you know, will they amount to anything long term?
Dale in Knapp, Wisconsin, turning to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Jason. I have a question. I've got 3 to 5 year old apple trees, and I've never really fertilized them. And I wondered what minerals, like calcium, or what fertilizer should I use, and when should I apply them?
Do you have a lot of grasses and other things growing underneath, or is it fairly weed free?
They are in a lawn situation, and I try to keep the grass around the trunk free.
Okay, so there's 2 things that you can do here before you do any fertilizing. One is to pull a soil test this spring, and you would just pull some samples around the rooting zone of the tree, send them in, and that's going to give you a good idea on your phosphorus and potassium needs. Those macronutrients would be the first place you'd go. And then from there is you've got an issue to do option to do a tissue test where you're going to send in some leaf samples, and they'll analyze the nutrient content. And you've got to do it at the right time of the year. Usually it's, if I remember right, the end of July. And you send them in, and that'll give you an idea of what's in the actual leaves. And then you know exactly what it might be short in. You know, just putting on fertilizer just because you could be wasting money or over-fertilizing.
Well, that's what I thought.
Besides the phosphorus and potassium, you know, calcium is likely going to be your next limiting. And a lot of commercial growers will use foliar feeds, calcium sprays, to help reduce some of those limitations. But again, it's a good idea just to, you know, if the trees are looking fine and looking healthy now, you know, I wouldn't fertilize necessarily until you've done a soil and a tissue test, and then you'll have a better idea what you're dealing with. The reason I asked about the grass is we see this a lot. If you put a 10-10-10 fertilizer on, all you're doing is fertilizing the grass. particularly with the nitrogen, and it never really gets to the tree itself. So you've got to have a fairly weed-free area under the trees to get the fertilizer to where it's needed.
Okay. Yep.
Some of that will leach through the rooting zone of the grass, but a lot of that gets tied up by the grass.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Dale. Appreciate it. Dave in Cobb, Wisconsin. Hello to you.
Hello. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I'm looking at my Miller catalog from New York State. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Well, they got the Wolf River apple tree here, and I was wondering, is that a good one for southern Wisconsin? And then I got another question about pecans.
All right. What about Wolf River? Do you like them, Jason?
I think they're an okay apple. You know, it's a really big apple, and people like them for making pies. I think there's so many others to choose from that maybe it wouldn't be at the top of my list, but it's definitely a tree that's been around for a long, long time. They're hardy, and they should do fine. So you might try one. If you don't like it, you can always graft something else onto it.
And then I want to ask about pecans. I see they got an advertisement for northern hardy pecans. I'll have my hands out there, please.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Pecans.
Yeah, as far north as I am, I never even really considered pecans. There's, you know, it's my kind of rule of thumb with the plant catalogs is if they say zone 5, they mean zone 4, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So just be aware, you know, you can try them, but you're pushing the envelope on something like a pecan, even in southern Wisconsin. That said, you know, it might be worth asking around even the extension agents in that part of the state, see what else they know, because again, being this far north, that's so far out of our reach that I haven't really considered it.
There you go. Aaron in Trempolo. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I was wondering, my son loves to eat peaches. What's the best way to grow the fruit seed?
All right.
You
want to try and grow a peach tree from seed?
Yeah, from the fruit he's eaten.
Yeah, right. I don't know offhand, but do a little digging to see if it needs any pre-treatment, the actual seed, any cooling or scarification.
Okay.
And then beyond that, if, you know, it's a matter of you might have to, get it soaked for a little while in water to get it absorbing water and then put it in a pot and see what you get. Now, it's not going to produce a peach like you ate. It'll be something different, most likely not very good. But
so soak it in water. I was drying it.
Yeah, at some point, the question is, does it need any chilling hours? And I don't know that offhand. I'd have to do some research on it. But generally, with any seeds that you're planting, you'd want to soak them first.
Oh, okay.
To get them absorbing water, and then you can. Sometimes you'll just wait till they germinate, and then you plant it. But typically, you soak them for a while, then plant it in your soil.
Mm-hmm. And just remember that you're not going to get a peach that tastes
right.
Like that same peach. They could be fun to grow.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks a lot for calling. Brian in Appleton. Hi.
Hi there. Was there a caller that was wondering where they could get hazelnut bushes just a little while ago?
I don't think so. I mean, we've talked in general what kinds of hazelnuts, you know, what varieties and so forth are maybe out there, and Badger Set hybrids came up as a place. But what's on your mind, Brian?
I just caught the radio and just heard just part of that that answer or whatever. And I actually participate in the Arbor Day Foundation as a hazelnut project, where for a small donation they'll send you like 3 seedling trees, and then they send you a questionnaire every year on how they're doing, size, and if they're bearing fruit and all that kind of stuff. It's a pretty neat little thing.
Oh, it sounds like a fun thing. And Jason, you're familiar with that.
Yeah, right. So on our website, MidwestHazelnuts.org, that's our research initiative website, there's a page with suppliers of hazelnuts, and the Arbor Day does provide seedlings. And those actually originate from the Badger Set research program. Those are seeds saved from the big Arbor Day planting. And then they grow out the plants and send you the plants. So you basically have hybrids, and no one's quite sure of the genetics behind those. Eventually, the Arbor Day Research Consortium, which includes Oregon State and Rutgers, they have a very active breeding program as well, and the hope is soon they'll have plant material available that's, you know, one step improved beyond what they've got, what they're sending right now. And the reason they're asking for your data is the same kind of thing. They're all seedling origin, so, you know, they don't really know what they're going to amount to. And what they're hoping, like we are, is that folks grow really good plants, and those can be moved on to help improve the industry.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in it because I had read something about a renewable energy option where they can make, I think it was the biodiesel from hazelnuts was a good source for that or something.
That's right.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
We have more callers online, although we have some open lines and can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on right away, almost right away. Don in Warren, Illinois, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I want to grow some popcorn. My granddaughter works for a popcorn company in Chicago, and she says they use both mushroom and butterfly. And I looked it up, and they said that both varieties grow in the same ear. And I don't see anything in the seed catalogs about those varieties. How about it?
Yeah, I'm not familiar. You said, what were the mushroom and what was the other variety?
Butterfly. And they're both big fat. The kernels that you don't break your teeth on.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with either of those varieties. Sounds like something to try. There, you said it's being used by a popcorn company out of Chicago. I assume they're growing these varieties in Illinois, or are they perhaps bringing them in from elsewhere?
Well, a local guy also has a popcorn, and he buys the seed, and he buys the mushroom. But so where do I go next?
Yeah, you know, check with your nearest extension agent office, the extension office, and they'll should have a good list of local seed companies that may have these two varieties. I'd start there and just start asking around. Offhand, I don't know who would carry these.
Yeah, you're going to find your local county extension office, whatever county you're in. There's pretty much, I think, every county in Illinois has a county extension office, so should be able to find that extension office and the hort agent or the ag agent there is going to be able to help you out, Don. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And we've got John and Kimberly, who's got a single Stanley plum tree, 3 years old, has never produced. When is the best time to prune this plum tree?
Generally, end of February, middle of March, and Stanley doesn't need to be pruned very hard.
Okay, so that's all right. And then we have an email from Muriel in Lone Rock. We brought back some bur oak acorns from Texas. Wonder if we will be able to successfully get them to grow here in Lone Rock, Wisconsin.
My guess would be probably not. I think the chilling hour requirements, like we talked about before, are going to be all off.
Yeah.
And that plant will probably suffer some winter injury. It's probably better off to find Baroque seeds from trees right here in Wisconsin.
John in Clinton, Iowa. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I got a pear tree question.
Okay.
There's a pear tree in Clinton that is about 100 years old. It produces really small pears, and they're early pears. How can I graft that tree, or can I take clippings and make that tree grow?
Yeah, you can definitely take scion wood. Same kind of thing. You're looking for those really vigorous one-year stems, water sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
And you would graft those onto other pear trees, or you can buy pear rootstock from... you might have to look to some other wholesale nurseries that sell fruit trees. There's a bunch around like Hilltop or CNO, and find a rootstock that you can graft that onto. Some... nursery companies will actually do that for you. If you send them a bunch of scion wood, they'll graft it for you, grow it out for a year, and then send it back.
Really?
Sometimes you'll get your best results that way. You have to just kind of poke around the internet, look for the tree nurseries or the fruit tree nurseries, and ask them if they'll do that for you. And if they don't, they'll know which nurseries do. So that's sometimes, especially if you really like the tree and it's fairly large and you've got a lot of scion wood you can harvest.
Yeah,
right. Quite a few that way. If you do it yourself, you know, grafting is pretty risky, so it doesn't always take.
Right. All right, thank you.
Give it a shot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, John. And Kelly in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. My question is, again, about a plum tree. I have an Italian plum tree. We live in northern Illinois. We have an Italian plum tree. It was planted 5 years ago. The first year, we had beautiful plums. Of course, it was young, so not a lot, but beautiful plums. And then every year after that, we get beautiful blooms. It starts to form the fruit. We have the little small green, maybe bigger than a pea, but they get to a certain size. And then at the end of June, beginning of July, they just all drop. Every year we've made sure that it had enough water. Last year we actually fertilized it, maybe not right with the spikes for fruit trees, but it happened again. What's your suggestion?
Well, there might be a couple things going on. The plant itself might have an insect infestation, something like plum curculio, and their feeding will cause them to drop sometimes. So you just have to, you know, pay close attention when it happens again this year.
Okay.
The other one that might be happening, and this is, I think, we're going to see more of, unfortunately, particularly with stone fruits, they don't require the same number of chilling hours as something like an apple does. And so they come out of their endodormancy much sooner, particularly now as we have these warm Decembers and early Januaries.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, then they're much more susceptible to these freeze-thaw cycles that we're having. And you might end up not killing the actual fruit bud itself, because the sepal and the petal and the stamen, those structures within the fruiting bud are fairly hardy, even when they're in echodormancy. But the vascular cells that connect the fruit to the tree are much more susceptible. So you might be killing vascular cells with these freeze-thaw cycles, but not the fruit. So you end up, or the flowers, you end up with a nice flower, you end up with some pollination, and then as the season progresses, those vascular cells are damaged enough that all the fruit drops. You know, we definitely saw a lot of that in the apples this year, really heavy, heavy June drops where they lost everything. So that's my guess. You know, you might try planting more plums. It doesn't sound like there's really much we can do other than if you're doing any pruning, delay that. Or you might look at trying to find something on the north-facing slope or even something that's casting, you know, on the north side of something that maybe casts a little shade. Not too much that it's going to put on the tree, but something that'll just help keep that thing from coming out of dormancy so soon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't have any room. Excuse me, put anything. Now, when I prune it, I'm looking at it right now. I'm sitting in my driveway. I'm looking at it, and I see the sprouts going straight up, but it's pretty tall. Should I be pruning from the very top then?
Well, either you want to bend those straight shoots down at more of a 60-degree angle, or selectively prune it so that you're forcing side growth off those main stems to get them to go horizontal. I mean, the other issue, too, with the Italian plum is you might just say, okay, let's try some other varieties. You might try the new black ice that's been developed for our region that should have more tolerance to the environmental conditions we've got these days. So I'd try that.
Yeah.
Is it for me to take a soil sample over to the Illinois Extension office and check that too?
Yeah, it certainly can't help, but there's really nothing that's going to cause that kind of fruit drop fertility-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
if
you've got major deficiencies, you're going to see it in other...
Yeah, never hurts to do a soil test, but there you go, Kelly. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And I want to give Jeff in Fall Creek a chance. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I live in Fall Creek, Wisconsin, which is just about 10 miles southeast of Eau Claire. There's an apple up here that I've tried called the Honeycrisp. It is the most delicious apple I've ever had. I'd like to try planting those, but I don't know if this is a good area to do that. And if not, what is another apple tree that would work good in my area?
Honeycrisp would do fantastically well there. It's just a question of what rootstock you might want to use, or if you can even find the ones. You know, you've got dwarfing rootstock or standard size. Most are semi-dwarf, so so they're a little bit smaller, more manageable tree. But Honeycrisp, that variety, would do just great. You know, there's the University of Minnesota has released some really nice cultivars. Zestar is another one worth trying. Snow Sweet is a later apple. That one's worth trying. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend the Honeycrisp for sure.
Excellent. And
the other advantage of Honeycrisp is it has some disease resistance to scab, so it's a little bit easier to manage. Nutrient issues, but, yep.
And would you recommend just one tree, two trees, three trees? How many trees? Is there, like, should you plant them more in groups or just singular?
Yeah, you know, officially you need more than one for pollinators, but because there's so many apples all over the place, typically it's not an issue. There's enough pollinator activity moving pollen around, but it's a good idea to have at least two trees, if not more. I mean, you can't have too many apples.
No. Well, you can never have too many anyway. So there you go, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. Casey had a Facebook question looking into nut trees for zone 4, 5-ish maybe. Know anything about the northern pecan?
Yeah, you know, again, I haven't worked with the pecans very much.
So the northern ones, yeah. Still,
it's still a stretch. And it's particularly with our, you know, if the climate changes and it gets where it's more consistently warm and we don't have these fluctuations, I think that'll extend our zones and opportunities. But for now, these crazy oscillations in temperature is going to put a strain on just about everything, our cold hardy stuff and even more so these marginal species and varieties.
Yeah. Jason, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you.
We'll see you for sure in May. See you for sure in May and hopefully before. Thanks again. Jason Fishbach, UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties, does a great job. And we'll always look forward to having him with us, and he'll be back. Thank you for listening as well. Peter Green of Infostar.com joins us on Monday here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.